Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another Fashion Law Dinner Party. We're traveling to Milan for this party, and I'm happy to say, talking to someone I've known for over 10 years. Avvocato Viola Bardi, a legal manager in-house for Kering Eyewear. Viola and I have had many aperitivi and dinner parties in Milan over the years. We met as law students and used to dream of the future roles we'd have in law and fashion over Aperol Spritz and the Navigli, over lunch and Via Monte Napoleone, during events at the Armani Club, and more. Given our history, it seemed obvious that were I to ever dedicate a part of this podcast to careers in fashion, law, and heritage, that Viola would be a perfect guest and that we would catch up over another proverbial dinner party in Milan. As you'll hear, Viola and I discuss heritage and what iconic means to her in light of her experience practicing fashion law in Milan and her experience as an in-house lawyer now. We also talk about what students and other early career lawyers interested in fashion law might consider as they embark on or explore a career serving clients in the fashion industry. Pairing a passion for fashion with substantive legal rules, like in Viola's case, legal rules that apply to corporations, or what we might also call business law, is key. Practicing fashion law is all about being very specific about how an interest in fashion meets substantive legal rules. Fashion law, after all, is about exploring how the needs of this specific industry shape legal rules and how the legal rules themselves are applied in this specific fashion industry. Viola never lost sight of her goal to be in-house. As she developed her expertise and took what might have seemed to be a winding road to her current destination of working in-house for a luxury conglomerate. Every experience you have builds knowledge. Or, as I like to say, we are all like Michelangelo, chipping away at the marble of our life until the form of our own David appears. Hi, Viola. It's so good to see you again. And I'm so looking forward to talking to you and to catching up about your role at Kering Eyewear. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's good to see you.
Thank you very much, Felicia, for your invitation. It's great to be here. And I'm also very proud to be here.
Well, listen, you know, we've known each other for a long time. We've been friends since we were law students. And I'm so proud and happy to say that you're a legal manager at Kering Eyewear now after practicing for over 9 years in Milan with a number of different law firms and gaining real expertise in fashion and law. So, you know, some of our listeners might be law students themselves, might be early career lawyers who want to transition to an in-house position. Could you tell us a little bit about how you charted your path in fashion and luxury law and how you began to work for Kering Eyewear?
Of course. During my career in law firms, I always focus on corporate law, which is still my main focus. And so I think my experience in corporate law really helped me and is still helping me a lot during my day-to-day work. At the same time, I was also very passionate about fashion, luxury. And during my studies, I also tried to gain a deeper knowledge of the fashion world. This means, for instance, that I attended a management fashion and luxury company in Italy at Bocconi when I was a law student there, also at Notre Dame, which we attended together for one semester. I studied trademarks, so I also had a knowledge of the U.S. and common law world of trademarks. And after my graduation, I took a master at Università Statale di Milano, focused on fashion law. So let's say while I was working in corporate, I always kept an eye to my passion in fashion. And my goal was exactly to translate this passion into my job. My goal was to work for a luxury company, of course. And then, so when I found this opportunity at Kering Eyewear, which is a part of the Kering Group, but at the same time as is unique identity, I will say it was, I was like, okay, this is my job, I need to apply. And as an advice to law students, I will say, always focus on what you really like, and don't be shy, I will say, if there is something you are really passionate about, don't be shy and show it. I think I was the selected candidate for this position among many other candidates. I think it was not only because of my knowledge and my skills, which of course you need to have to pass a selection and then to keep the job, but also my passion. I think what made the difference was also my passion. And you can, it's something that you can really feel it. So don't be shy. If you're passionate about passion, just show it, and it will pay back for sure.
That's great advice. I completely agree, if I do say so. So that segues very well, I think, into my next question for you, which was, what does a day in your life as a legal manager look like? Obviously, you said, you know, Caring Eyewear is part of the Caring luxury conglomerate. And we can think of so many iconic brands that Caring, owns, from Gucci to Balenciaga, Saint Laurent, and so many more. So could you tell us a little bit about, you know, what it's like, especially because, you know, you're an Italian attorney, and I know we might have US fashion lawyers, but also, Italian attorneys in different areas beyond corporate law. And a lot of your work, as far as I understand it too, and especially working for, you know, a global conglomerate like Caring, is to really cross cultural legal boundaries, as it were, right? To interact with your American colleagues and your Italian colleagues. So could you tell us, like, what's a day in the life of Viola?
Oh, wow. Well, it's very different. I would say every day is different from the other, because, for instance, today, I was in Milan, in my office, so my headquarter, I would say. But 2 weeks ago, I was in New York City, and 1 week ago, I was in Peoria, Illinois. So it's very different. I don't want to say you do not know what expect for the next day, but is changing and is challenging, but is so much interesting at the same time.
You mentioned Peoria, Illinois. That might not be, shall we say, the most glamorous location that people think of, when they think of Caring and working in house. But of course, you know, being from the Midwest myself, I of course think the Midwest is such a wonderful place. But I mean, could you tell us a little bit about, you know, what that's like to go to Peoria, and what are some of the day-to-day things that you do in your job? I imagine you do some contract negotiations, for example.
Yes, definitely. Well, I really like to go to Peoria. I've been there twice. There we have our Maui gym headquarters. And probably I like it so much because of my experience at Notre Dame. I know Peoria is not South Bend, but it reminds me a lot of South Bend. You know, it's still Midwest in my view. And I do like it. So our Maui Jim is one brand which we own directly. is very important for us. It was acquired in 2022, and now we are growing together, I will say. So being there, it's great for me, not only because, I mean, I'm drafting agreements for Maui Jim, but also because when I'm in Peoria, I get the opportunity to meet people in person. And I think this is a fundamental part of my job, because we have so many subsidiaries all around the world. I don't want to say the legal department has to go everywhere, but as much as I can, I'd like to meet people in person and to work with them together. Also in the same time zone, that sometimes is very helpful. but this is a great opportunity that Caring Eyewear is giving me.
Two very practical things that, you know, people often might not think about. Number one, trying to schedule meetings across time zones, how difficult it can be when you're working for a luxury conglomerate, and also how impactful in-person negotiations can be, obviously. I'm really glad you mentioned Maui Jim, because I did a little bit of research on Maui Jim before we talked, right? Full disclosure. And I noticed that the description of Maui Jim says that it's recognized for its outstanding lens technology and distinctive Hawaiian heritage. So, I mean, as you know, because obviously, you know, we've known each other for a long time, and you know my own passions for fashion and heritage. The relationship between heritage and luxury and heritage and fashion is something I think a lot about. And I'm wondering, you know, how you conceive of this relationship between heritage and luxury in your own work? Is thinking about heritage something that's important for you as you draft contracts, or as you think about, for example, you know, how to present a new brand that Caring acquires? And obviously, I'm respecting completely the confidentiality you have in your job, so I'm not asking for any behind the scenes secrets here, but just in general, would love to hear your thoughts about heritage and luxury.
Oh, sure. Right. Very, very nice question. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Well, Maui Jim, well, I can't say is my favorite brand, because I have to love all the brands of our portfolio. And actually, I'm wearing at the moment Saint Laurent glasses. But if we talk about sunglasses, my heart really goes to Maui Jim, because they have this wonderful technology. It's called Polarize Plus 2. Actually, you can find this name inside many of our frames. So Maui Jim already had this technology. And now our current new slogan is Color You Can Feel. And I think is a perfect one, because trust me, go to an optician, try a pair of Maui Jim if you didn't try them yet, and try to look outside. If you look at the color, especially red and green, they are so bright. They are so different. And it's something you can't describe. You really need to feel it. But when you wear Maui Jim, you can't go back to other sunglasses. And also another wonderful thing Maui Jim can do is that they can add prescriptions on your sunglasses. So for me, for instance, it was always a challenge, because I used to buy, before joining the company, I used to buy pair of sunglasses, and then I used to change the lenses because I have prescriptions. With my regime, you can add your prescriptions on the lenses. So it's something very amazing, because you can keep the technology, and obviously if you need prescriptions, you need to have them at the same time. But really, trust me, try a pair of my regime and you really feel the difference. Also, regarding this brand, the nice part is that they have a very strong heritage, of course, because they have the Hawaiian style, Hawaiian roots, I will say, and a very important technology. But what we are trying to do with our new collection, the new collection was launched this year, actually last March in New York, with our new ambassador, Eva Mock. So he's young, very stylish, and he's from Hawaii. So this shows you how we keep our link with Maui Jim heritage and roots. And so this new collection is more, I would say, luxury if you compare it to the previous Maui Jim collection. I'm not talking under marketing approval, so I hope I did a good presentation. But let's say my feeling is that, also because now Maui Jim is part of the Caring group, is more, we add a bit of luxury on something that was already great, like the technology.
That's so insightful what you just said. Two things really pop out to me. The first is this Color You Can Feel slogan from Maui Jim. I didn't know about that slogan, but it's so, I think, apropos of what's happening now, especially in fashion. I mean, we've always known about the importance of color for brands like Tiffany and even like Valentino Rosso, but also just the presence of color in fashion and the link between, you know, seeing the world in certain colors, right, through sunglasses. That's great, both from, I'm sure, you know, those listening in can think about a trademark element to that, but also just an aesthetic, right, element to that for the brand. And that's great about matching heritage. I mean, often, of course, as you note, when you're, when you're thinking about who's going to be the ambassador, heritage is a really great, link to guide you as to who the ambassador will be for a luxury brand. And of course, Caring is known for repositioning brands, so that's no surprise that it's more luxury now. So that brings me to another keyword other than heritage that we've talked about before on this podcast, but that I'm really excited to get your feedback on in your perspective, which is iconic. Usually when we think about something as iconic, and we've talked about this with Jessica Barber from Calvin Klein and with Eleonora Rosati from the IP Cat, who's an attorney herself, we think about things that maybe are famous. We think about things that are well known, but we also think about things that are related to an icon or that represent a specific type of symbolism. I'm just wondering, I mean, when we think about Kering, we think about so many, if I dare say so, iconic brands that Kering owns. And I'm wondering, you're not just obviously a lawyer who works for a luxury conglomerate and has expertise in fashion law, but you're also, if I might say, a fashionista or knowledgeable about fashion yourself.
Yes, you can.
Yes, okay. And you've been this way.
I love
way.
This definition.
Thank you. And you've been this way for as long as I've known you. So I'm really curious to know, you know, what do you think of when you think iconic? What comes to mind, both in terms of brands, but also just in your own shopping habits, if I might ask?
Of course. So, well, if I think about iconic, for me, is something that lasts. I don't want to say lasts forever, but at least for many generations. So the first thing that comes into my mind is probably Gucci Horsebreed, which is something very, very iconic, and you can have it on your shoes, on your bag, basically everywhere. But yes, it's something that iconic for me, is something that that lasts. And that's why if you are talking about my shopping habits, for instance, the first item I purchased as a Kering Eyewear employee was a Gucci bag. And more precisely, a Diana bag. The Diana bamboo bag, and if you think about it, it's a bag from the 90s, but is so modern and so perfect. Every day I wear my bag, I feel fashion.
So I personally, so, I love that reference to the Diana bag because my mom had one of the original Diana bags. And so when I saw, before it was called the Diana bag, you know, when it was designed by Tom Ford, but then when Diana started wearing it, they started calling it the Diana bag. But so when I'm so happy you mentioned that example, because I visited the Gucci Museum before they closed it, announced the Gucci Galleria, but they had a Diana bag on display and I recognized it from my childhood. And then when Alessandro Michele came out with the new Diana bag, I just was like, I was so excited because, as you say, it's timeless and it's a revisited design that has meaning and that is classic and has the bamboo handle. So we're both partial to the Diana bag, I think.
Yes, and it's also something that stays. Let me say, even if the designer changes because. We had it in the collection of Alessandro Michele, and now also Sabato is adding it to the new collection. I mean, the spring summer 2024, you can find the Diana bag, obviously with some addition from the new designer, but it's still the Diana bag.
There's another iconic brand that I think you and I have kind of touched on in past conversations, which is Lindbergh. And I think that that's an interesting brand. Could you tell us a little bit about that too? I think it's a recent acquisition for Kering.
Oh, yes. Lindbergh was acquired in 2021 by Kering Eyewear. And it's a very iconic brand as well because Lindbergh has, very strong Nordic roots, or better, Danish roots. So if you think about the best quality of glasses, you probably think about Lindbergh because we are talking about iconic, we are talking about luxury. And in my view, Lindbergh is a great representation of this both of these qualities because it's almost made to measure, which is something incredible for a pair of glasses. And It's a great experience. I still have to try it. But they tell me that if you go to a Lindbergh, I mean, to an optician who is selling Lindbergh, the glasses are really customized on your face, on your nose, on your eyes. So it's like to buy, I will say, a tailor-made dress. But it's a pair of glasses. So that's the beauty of it.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, and at the same time, we have a great, I would call them ambassador, even if I'm pretty sure there is not a sponsorship agreement in place, because the Queen of Denmark used to wear only Lindbergh. So, yeah, it's a very great ambassador. If you look at them, you can see most of them have no frames. So they are so light, so comfortable to wear. And I think this is a luxury product.
Yes, no, and great that there's a royal connection. So it seems like, you know, from what you've described to me, there's a real connection in the way you think about your practice and corporate law between the value of a company and the value of the products that, you know, they create. And in some senses, this is logical, right? I mean, the value of a company is only as good sometimes as the products. But are there, just as there are great examples of luxury brands like Lindbergh and Maui Jim, do you think beyond Kering now, given your, you know, knowledge of the fashion sphere, do you think there are any brands that are right from a corporate standpoint for a turnaround? I know I'm going a little bit off script here, but I just wanted to ask you if there are any other brands, since you do have this knowledge as a corporate lawyer and as someone who's very keyed into fashion products, you know, are there any other brands that you think, oh, well, that's a good company, or that's made some, you know, that's gone through some changes? I mean, I think, for example, and of course, as so many people know, because I'm pretty open about it, I'm a huge Ferragamo aficionado. I'm a big Ferragamo fan. And I think all the time about how Ferragamo's heritage has been so consistent for so long. And now Maximilian Davis has really come in and he's shaken things up in a good way, obviously, but also in ways that some people of certain generations who might have been real like Ferragamo devotees are thinking, oh, this is different. Kind of like, and I know this is LVMH, not Kering, but kind of like when LVMH bought Tiffany's and they did, you know, the Not My Mother's Tiffany ad. And some people were like, ooh, that's very jarring. So beyond Kering, not talking about Kering now, do you think that are there any other fashion brands that like strike you, or that, you know, you think might, in your corporate view, might be ready for a turnaround or of interest?
I believe that Kering Eyewear now is so successful because what we do is basically that we keep each brand DNAs, and then we translate it into sunglasses. So if you look at our collection of all our brand, like Balenciaga, Bottega Veneta, and also Kering Eyewear as in own portfolio, also Richemont brands like Cartier, Montblanc, we are making glasses for them. So the important part here is that to understand each brand DNA and then translate it into a product. And I think that's why we are so successful right now. At the same time, maybe, so in my view, some brand could do that. I'm not giving advice to competitors, obviously, but maybe relying more on the brand DNA, on the brand heritage, will be something that could help each brand, basically, because for me, I love the past probably, I love the future at the same time, but I think that keeping something from the past is often the key of success. For instance, I've just finished my book, The House of Gucci, and the famous book from which also the movie comes from. Actually, in the book, there is obviously much more. But if you look at it, the family story is very interesting because it starts from Gucci, so from the very beginning. From that book is that there are a lot of iconic elements, like you can see how the bamboo bag was born. You can see how they made from a need. For instance, after the Second World War, they didn't have raw materials to work on, and they have to invent something new. I think in the past, you can get almost everything from the past. Of course, you need to transfer the past into current modern age, I would say. But at the same time, if you're looking for a luxury, if you're looking for iconic products or elements in general, let's look at the past.
Importance of brand DNA, a key takeaway. So Viola, I have one last question for you. And this has been such a great conversation and it's been super insightful. And if I may say so, super fun to talk to you as always. But you know, one of the things that we see a lot at luxury brands is this conversation between non-lawyers and lawyers. So, you know, creative directors and lawyers, people who are part of the design team or maybe part of an archive and lawyers. I'm just wondering, is there anything that you would want or that you really wish that creatives or, you know, people who are not in the legal field might know about your work as a lawyer? So what types of information from creatives do you think, you know, would make your work as an in-house legal counsel easier, for example? Or what do you sometimes you find yourself maybe wishing, oh, I wish they just understood. Maybe it's a timing thing. Maybe it's like, oh, I need that thing by 5 p.m. and they don't respect time. I don't know. but that's my last question.
Well, yes, because we are both lawyers, so we know that deadlines are fundamental for us. Maybe from a designer, they have not the same feelings on deadline, I will say. My message will be maybe just we need time. We need time. The process also of drafting an agreement, reviewing it, amending it is obviously a long process. So maybe it's not something I'm really experiencing right now. It's just I will say an advice to the creative part of a brand will be that they need obviously time to invent, to design, and of course to think about new products, new styles. But at the same time, we need time to review the agreements. So we need to be involved from the very beginning, which is also important because the sooner the better, I would say. And then, we are here to do our job. So sometimes we are strict, but our purpose is always the success of the brand, the success of the company and of the group as well.
What a great note to end on. Lawyers aren't your enemies, they're your friends, right?
Exactly. No, I'm telling this because sometimes when I'm with counterparties, they are like, they know I'm from the legal team. Oh, there is Viola, she's a legal manager, because, I mean, at first they see me, I'm still young, hopefully, and I'm smiling, I'm so fashion, and then they're like, oh, you are from the legal team. We didn't know we needed our lawyer. And like, you don't worry. I'm here in peace. I'm your friend. So once they even told me, you don't look like a lawyer. I was like, okay, I'll take this like a compliment.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know how a lawyer would look like.
I was just going to say, that's a whole other episode for us, like preconceived notions of what a lawyer looks like.
Maybe a man, probably an old man. I don't know. But yeah, so I am there because, I mean, we are, yeah, it's true. We are drafting in agreements, but our goal is your goal as well. So we are here to help. Yes, we are definitely here to help and to wear fashion clothes as well at the same time. So
that's great and also inspiring because it tells all those young women out there who are interested in becoming lawyers that you can dress fashion and you can embrace your style and you don't have to give up the seriousness of being an attorney or the great ability to do your job well. So another inspiring thing to take away. Viola, thank you so much. Grazie mille. This has been great. I've been so happy to have this conversation with you.
Thank you very much. It was great for me as well.
My conversation with Viola highlighted the role that heritage plays in a brand's DNA. And by extension, Heritage's role in structuring business agreements between a luxury conglomerate and its subsidiaries. Understanding how to best protect and valorize the heritage, the story, and foundations of a brand is an important part of contractual negotiations. Heritage can also inform how a brand chooses ambassadors. Our discussion about Maui Jim was a great example of this. Heritage can also highlight a brand's unique market offerings in a space not only of fashion, but of culture too. The Queen of Denmark may not be an official ambassador of Lindberg, but the affiliation with the royal family is certainly an important cultural link for the brand. Luxury, as Viola highlighted through Maui Jim, can also be an addition to the heritage of a brand. While we might think of luxury as timeless, a brand that is more timely or trendy, innovative, or cutting edge can still have a strong heritage, whether or not that brand is yet part of the luxury segment of the wider industry. And of course, perhaps the best takeaway from my conversation with Viola was, you can find a way to be fully yourself and an incredible attorney who excels at her job at the same time. One phrase that struck me in my conversation with Viola was Maui Jim's slogan, "Color you can feel." Color is increasingly an important part of fashion brands' IP portfolios, but color is also an important part of cultural communications. Full disclosure, I'm working on a project about color, IP law, and fashion heritage right now. Viola's description of color was also connected to tech and to Maui Jim's Hawaiian heritage. Color, in our conversation, connected to innovation and to local communities. Communities that are often essential as artisans or as cultural touchstones for fashion and luxury brands' own value propositions. Color between law and heritage, innovative techniques to create fashion, and those techniques' connections to local communities and traditional artisanal practices and craftsmanship are just some of the themes that we will discuss in the future as part of our Fashion Law Dinner Party conversations. There are many more issues of law, design, and heritage on the table. I hope you've enjoyed the episodes thus far. Keep your Prosecco bar stocked, your aperitivo recipes at the ready, and your best dinner party guest style hanging in your closet, because there are more Fashion Law dinner parties on the horizon.